This is the Dave Glover Show with Dave, Rachel, and Kevin. Sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
I don't mind coming here, wasting all my time.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Today is a big day, a much anticipated day in the Donald Trump felony trial in New York. Michael Cohen is on the stand. Michael Cohen is just about as bad of a witness as a lawyer will ever get to present, and just about as good a witness as you'll ever get to cross-examine. But he's in a rare position for him where all of the other witnesses on the prosecution side and all the other evidence and all the documentary evidence all agrees with him. So what he's saying on the stand has already been corroborated by a dozen or so witnesses. That's new for him. And so what he's doing is, as I said in the last segment, he's kind of filling in that warm, gooey center of the chocolate chip cookie by putting personality to it and talking about just here's exactly what Donald Trump said and here's how he said it and here's what he looked like when he said it. That's what the case was missing before this. Chad Pleben's been doing a great job of keeping track of this and giving us his own expert opinions, and he joins us now. Hey, Chad.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Anything I say there that you disagree with?
No, nothing whatsoever. No question at all that Michael Cohen has a tremendous credibility problem going into this, but they had to put him on because, as you said, he's the one that had the direct contact with Donald Trump. His credibility is going to be enhanced because exactly of what you said, his testimony has been corroborated by a variety of other witnesses. For example, Pecker, Hope Hicks, Weisselberg, the notes, handwritten notes, Exhibit 35, we talked about that before, handwritten notes from Weisselberg, McConney, he's the comptroller. That's Exhibit 36, all about the $130,000 payment. So it really doesn't matter if you don't like Cohen, if you didn't like Stormy Daniels, what they said has been corroborated. And so the remember, it all started way back when Pecker and Michael Cohen met with Donald Trump, and they all started talking about the catch and kill stories that the Inquirer was going to do. And so thereafter, Michael Cohen got those stories from the Inquirer. He was aware of the catch and kill stories, and he obviously told Donald Trump about them. Now, there was another interesting part of his testimony today. And we kind of knew about this before, that on September the 6th of 2016, Cohenly secretly recorded a conversation that he had with Trump, in which they talked about a payoff to Karen McDougal through Pecker and through the Inquirer. He claims that he recorded it, and a lot of this, Dave, they're bringing out on direct examination. And so they're going to talk about his prior convictions. They're going to talk about all of the things that he did so that they could give them to the jury rather than let them wait for the defense to bring them up during cross-examination. And so one of the things they said, well, why did you record? It's a little unusual for you to be recording your own client, particularly at this stage. Now, it's September the 6th, so why'd you do that? And he said he recorded it for Pecker to ensure he wanted to then play that for Pecker to ensure that Pecker was going to be repaid. Because remember, the Inquirer was going to pay McDougal the $150,000 that she was demanding in order to kill that particular story. So he says that during that conversation, and you can hear it on the tape, he says that Donald Trump participated in the conversation. Donald Trump talked about how that this was going to be funded. He suggested that maybe they pay cash. And Cohen said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go ahead and set up some sort of phony LLC. And Weisselberg who is not going to be a witness in this, and I will go ahead and take care of that. So remember, the doorman was he was paid off because he claimed that Trump fostered an illegitimate child, and now we're talking about McDougal. And according to Trump, or according to Cohen, he kept Trump apprised of all these things. So then, right before the noon recess, they talked about on October the 7th. Now, remember, you know, the election's in November. So now we're October the 7th. We're a little more than a month away from the election. That's when the Access Hollywood tape hits through the Washington Post. And the National Enquirer gets a hold of Cohen to say, you know, we've got a story, and Stormy is looking to sell that story. Trump responds that this is going to be an absolute disaster. Women are going to hate me. Guys might think this is cool, but it's going to be a disaster for the campaign. And he then tells Cohen to stop the story from getting out.
Chet, let me stop you right there. Mm-hmm. If a juror believes that testimony, isn't that sufficient nexus that they've been needing between the misdemeanor and the felonies to show that what was in his mind was the election?
But I think they have to go beyond that. You know, and he's been saying, well, you know, wanted to prevent this, or that was going to be part of their defense. I wanted to make sure that my wife didn't find out anything about that. Now, I doubt that that's going to be a viable defense unless he testifies, which I don't think that he will. But in any event, let's say, and the prosecution is saying, no, this was about the election. He wanted to make sure that the election, that nothing happened and these stories didn't get out, because otherwise he was going to be adversely impacted during the course of the election. And so even if he wanted it that Melania wasn't going to find out, but it also was to make sure that the election wasn't adversely impacted, that's a dual motive, but it doesn't make any difference, because if his intent, and that's where we're going with all this, what was his intent? If his intent was to make sure that he got elected, and now we have to get into it, and Cohen just got into this a little bit just a little while ago. He was paid $420,000, and it was for, they claimed, for legal fees. Well, that is the false business records that he submitted. That's the misdemeanor. Now they have to show what his intent was in order to falsify or cover up, rather, a further crime, which is a campaign finance law. And if you remember, Hope Hicks talked about previously that he admitted to her that he knew about some of these payoffs. So if he knew about the payoffs and the campaign finance disclosure law wasn't fulfilled at that time, then that's the next criminal act that he was trying to cover up. But we're not there yet. I think that they have to prove what that criminal act was, whether or not it was a campaign finance law violation, whether or not it was a tax law violation, because they, in talking about the business record and saying that it was legal fees for Michael Cohen, under those circumstances, that was false. But the next step would be, okay, well, why was it false? Well, you got to show some other criminal intent as far as some other crime is concerned. That would be whatever they, I'm thinking that it's going to be, they haven't said, but I'm thinking it's going to be either campaign finance law or a tax law violation. Because remember, they paid Cohen, according to the handwritten notes of Weisselberg, they were paying him double for what he paid for Stormy Daniels at $130,000. And those were to cover his taxes. Well, the question then was whether or not that was properly recorded to the IRS. And I don't know where they're going to go with that. So, yes, in answer to your mm-hmm. a long answer to your question, yes, we're very close, but we're still not there yet as far as the essential elements of the crime are concerned.
So, Chad, based on your decades of being a defense attorney, I think you can tell my audience that when you're dealing with a case involving a pit of vipers, pretty much everyone who's going to testify is going to be a viper, right? And so you can kind of put away your Pollyannish ideas. Trump, Cohen, Weisselberg, all these guys are dirty. And when they start turning on each other, you're going to have one dirty guy testifying against another dirty guy. The other thing is, that's unique, not unique, but that's a little different about Michael Cohen is typically on a cross-examination, you're a real piece of crap, aren't you? People try to fight that. No, I'm not. I'm an upstanding. He doesn't try to fight it. He absolutely admits that he was a terrible human being. He's just spinning it that he became a terrible human being to serve Donald Trump. And then I think another thing that helps the prosecution, and you talked about this early on in your analysis, is that Donald Trump put them in a trick box by coming out before the trial and saying, I've never even met these people, much less had an affair with them, much less paid them off, which I'm sure there are some people out there who believe that, who are really deep into the Trump lifestyle. But I think a reasonable juror coming at it is going to have a hard time believing that all of this is just based on a couple of women lying about a powerful man.
Yeah, I think it was a terrible idea at the outset to claim that not only did he not have sex with Stormy Daniels, but he didn't know her. He didn't know Karen McDougal. I mean, you know, look, there's nothing wrong with him having sex with Karen McDougal. There's nothing illegal about that. Obviously, his wife's not going to like that. And obviously, the female voters may not like that, particularly in light of the Access Hollywood tape. But there's nothing illegal about that. And on top of that, if they wanted to have a non-disclosure agreement from both McDougal as well as Stormy Daniels, there is nothing wrong with that. It's when we get into start paying them off to keep their mouths shut, and then we claim that there was monies paid to Michael Cohen for legal fees and a legal contract that he never had, and that's where we get into the problems. And I don't think that there's much question at this point that the prosecution has established the false business records. I don't think there's much question about that at all. And now we get into the rest of it as to whether or not what Donald Trump knew, when he knew it, and what his intent was. And that's where Michael Cohen comes into play. That's where Hope Hicks comes into play. And to another certain extent, that's where David Pecker comes into play, because this all started at the very beginning. And it obviously, he wasn't thinking, if you believe Stormy Daniels, he wasn't certainly thinking about his wife when he was involved with any of that situation. And imagine, given her testimony, imagine that what that would have done to his campaign had that all entered the public domain. Yeah.
He had good reason to be worried.
There's no question about that. And I think they established that. And I think they established it not only through Michael Cohen and the urgency of this. Remember, this is all right before the election. I mean, we're talking September and October, right before a November election. And so clearly he's worried about it. The tape that Michael Cohen recorded him on, the tape establishes that, that A, he knew about it, and B, he was concerned about it. And he gives them directions to go and make sure, kill this. Michael Cohen was the fixer, and he needed to fix this. You think that Michael Cohen, for a New York minute, would be getting a loan for himself and not Donald Cohen, or not Donald Trump, and Donald Trump never knew about it? Crazy.
All right, buddy. Thank you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You bet.
DGS on KMOX. So Cardinals dropped 3 out of 4 in Milwaukee. Are they where they were last year?
No, they're one game better.
One game better. Got to hold on to what you
through,
can.
Through 40 games, 15 and 25 last year, 16 and 24 this year.
So Tommy Ackerman had an interesting interview with Mozeliak on Sunday morning. What were the basics?
Yeah, so obviously Mo comes on with Tom every Sunday. It's, you know, with some exceptions here and there, but it's every Sunday, and Ollie too.
And they have a good relationship.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And Tom just asked him about, you know, the fan unease and, you know, people wanting a change, right? Not just words, not just an acknowledgement that things are bad, which is what we're getting, right? Ollie says those things, Mo says those things, but he made the point to Mo and bringing and asking the question that, hey, their fans are, they want to see something. They want to see some change. And Mo acknowledged that, look, we're all on the line. You know, you're getting to the point where something is going to have to change. And he said, you know, there's accountability for everyone in the, you know, in the organization and starting with me. So he's talking about himself. And there are a lot of fans that are, I mean, I think any change would be something welcome from the fans' perspective that we're talking about that group, because words aren't going to change anything. The only thing that could change something would be action, right? Unless the team just starts playing better. So you have a choice if you're the organization. You can stay the path and say, we're going to play better, and that's we're not changing. Or you can make a change that probably doesn't really alter the structure of your team, right? I mean, let's say you fired Oliver Marmol. What does that do to make Paul Goldschmidt hit better? What does that do to make an entire lineup hit better?
Answer that for me. What does it do?
Nothing other than sometimes people think it's, quote-unquote, a wake-up call. But the Blues fired Craig Berube. They still miss the playoffs. When you're not a good enough team or you're not playing well enough, you can do all you want with moves that would be mostly symbolic.
Did they screw themselves by firing Schilt? Not saying that they shouldn't have. I'm just saying that by taking what appeared to a lot of fans to be sort of an arbitrary and capricious act like that, did that give them their one mulligan for a coach?
It definitely does two things. One, I think it's a totally fair question. We have no idea whether or not it would have gone differently. Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have. So, but it's a fair question to ask, but it also does, I think this put, you know, when they hired Oliver Marmol and when they gave him the extension, it put everything squarely on John Mozeliak and Bill DeWitt II. I mean, you've now fired Mike Matheny, Mike Schilt, and if you fired Oliver Marmol like three guys in 5 years, that's a lot.
I'm Cardinals second baseman Nolan Gorman. It's game day.
It's the Cards and Angels tonight. Ameren Total Access 743. First pitch 8:38.
Let's play ball.
On your voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
DGS on KMOX. Sweet 16 with Skip Weber coming up at the top of the hour. Dave Murray joins us now. Hello, Dave.
Oh, what a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Little rain must fall. No rain, no rainbows.
So, Dave, have we pretty much caught up on rain and moisture and such?
Yeah, we're actually 3-4 inches above average right now. And that's good going into the summer. Oh, speaking of the summer, my summer forecast is Thursday.
Can't believe it.
Takes me by surprise. I mean,
I know.
This one didn't because you've been promoting it, but I mean, it just doesn't seem possible.
Mm-hmm. It really, you know, it May 1st hit. Now, as you guys know, I think about it all the time, but May 1st hit and it was like, I got to think a date. When are we going to do a date? And grandson is coming in the week of the 20th. So I thought, oh, let's do it on the 16th then.
Yeah, have it all out of the way.
Right. And then it really kicked in. It's like, oh, wait a minute. That's 16 days away. I really need to get cranking on this thing.
So far, Dave, has there been anything especially interesting about the summer forecast? I know you won't give us hints, but I mean, just in your own work?
It's not going to be our typical summer.
Oh, okay.
It's not going to be the typical humid summer.
Intriguing.
Yes.
Okay.
How's that?
It's a good tease.
For a tease.
It's a really good tease. So quite a bit of rain this week, right?
Yeah, it's an unsettled week. The most rain we're going to see will continue into tonight and during the day tomorrow. comes to an end Tuesday evening. Then Wednesday is just a spectacular day. Sunny skies, 75 degrees. Then the next system comes in, developing rain, thunder showers, Thursday, especially Thursday afternoon, Thursday night, and into Friday. This one, Thursday, Friday, does not look like as much rain. It's going to be more dry time come Thursday and Friday, but it's kind of an unsettled weather pattern, and it's a cool pattern in the 70s, and neither the one that we're in right now and the one the end of the week is severe. It is just kind of a fall-like rain pattern, unusual.
Okay. Headlines, Rach?
Headlines is brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. According to a new Gallup poll, college students list their mental health and stress as the top reasons to consider dropping out of school.
Oh, suck it up.
Oh, I was not expecting that.
Come on.
There's an interesting topic just in general. Like, older generations have been saying suck it up, so as long as there's been younger generations.
Right, right.
Is this the most appropriate suck it up?
Well, I think here's what I would throw out there just based on numbers. This is a young group of people that will say these things out loud and they're comfortable talking about it. But for as long as I can remember, and I've been covering it in sports because people talk about graduation rates for football players, basketball players, whatever. Graduation rates from colleges, four-year colleges, the percentage of students that enter as freshmen who graduate in 5 years is 50% or less. So they may just be verbalizing what was not verbalized before but was acted upon, if I'm saying that correctly.
I can see that.
Because most people don't finish for whatever reason. A lot of times it's money, maybe it's these kinds of things, but that's been going on forever because I used to get crap. People like, oh, only 60% of the football team graduating. Well, that's better than the student body.
Not only are they saying it out loud, they're saying it proudly.
Right, right. I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
The comfort level with which we talk about it.
All in college and graduate school, and I'll just use myself as an example. Sure, there's times you think, oh, man, what am I doing? Is this worth it? But then you really do. You just kind of have to shake yourself and say, no, let's push this through. This is what you want to do when you get out of here.
According to a new study from Zillow, families are now spending more on childcare than on housing. For example, in Milwaukee, childcare and mortgage costs take up about 80% of a family's income. That is just insane that much of your paycheck is being eaten away by your mortgage and childcare.
I wonder what they mean by childcare.
I think they mean like daycare.
Man. Well, I know back when Nick was going, and Nick's 29, it was $1,200 a month. So if 30 years ago it was $1,200 a month, who knows what the hell's
going to say? My kid's 27, yeah. So when she was born, we were talking about, like, okay, because at the time we both worked, and we were talking about whether or not Susan would go back to work or just stay at home and take care. And we started doing some of the math. We're like, you basically just be working to pay for
a toss-up,
you'd just basically be working to pay for daycare.
Yeah, you know, when we were going through it, our son's in his 40s now. There really was not daycare.
Interesting.
As we know it today. I mean, you could bring somebody in. Janice's mom's lived with us for a long time just to make it all work.
Mm-hmm. The feds are investigating the Amazon robo-taxis because they've been involved in two crashes in which they were rear-ended by motorcyclists after braking suddenly, causing minor injuries. Hmm. So,
I don't like robo-cars, man.
No. That scares me.
Don't you guys agree that like if it's either got to be all or nothing on the automated cars?
Yeah, like because, everything is automated.
Right, because how do you interact with people that are totally unpredictable? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know how those two things mesh very well.
Yep.
New York is going to lower their speed limit in city streets to 20 miles per hour. It's pretty low. But they've had basically it's the governor of New York signed off on Sammy's law. It gives the city the authority to set its own speed limits to lower the risk of accidents. The law is named for a 12-year-old who was fatally struck by a driver in 2013.
I saw something interesting today. So my mom is in a facility kind of Webster Groves-ish, and I take 44 to Barrie, and there's a street light there, and you turn left, and I am so used to people running the lights downtown.
Yeah.
But when I got up to that, I was the fourth person in line, and the first two ran the red light. I was like, we're doing this in Webster Groves now? Mm. What, Kirkwood next? Are you kidding me? Yeah, the whole scofflaw
is... You have to really pay attention.
Oh, yeah.
People are just so selfish and entitled. Like, I don't want to wait for this light, so I'm more important than everyone else, and I'm going to risk everyone else's safety. It just drives me absolutely nuts.
Yeah, that and then the people that will make the erratic move to not miss a turn, right? Like, I'm going to cut across three lanes. You know what?
Yes.
Just go up another exit or go up another street and turn around, because the risk of whipping across three lanes or cutting somebody off is stupid. Forgetting what you could do to someone else.
Yeah,
you could cost yourself $10,000 in damage to your car because you're too impatient to go up another 1 minute and turn around.
But as the driver behind that person, I always say, you didn't know you were going to make that turn?
Mm.
Shouldn't you? I know people get lost and things like that, but you know, if you have your navigation system on, or my gut feeling with that is they're listening to the radio and they're just not paying attention.
It's okay to turn around.
It's becoming increasingly difficult where we are at Tucker and Olive to not drive or walk past somewhere where someone's been murdered. I mean that literally
up and down the streets around us.
But the one at 14th and Market somehow, because it's so close, and it's right where we go walk every single day.
Yeah.
And it's right where we come in every single day, Wheels. And there's something every morning I get a chill up my spine.
I mean, you can just walk. I mean, at, like, almost every corner, because we have the murder shell, right? What's that, two blocks down?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the other gas station that's further down. They've had a shooting there. We've got car accidents left and right up and down here. It's mind-numbing, to be honest. Like, how can it be that bad? And what else is right down the street?
And what it
City
tells
Hall
me,
is literally right there.
It's not millionaires who are shooting each other.
No.
It tells me how easy it must be to get a gun cheap on the streets.
Yeah.
So easy.
Think about what's surrounding us, too. Like, City Hall's there. Police headquarters is right up the road. I mean, we are in an area you would think would be secure and somewhat safe just because of what's around you.
No, the guy that killed the mother and daughter after the Drake concert was within 20 yards of the police station.
It was at the intersection where the police headquarters is, yeah.
More Americans, I hate to change the subject here, but more Americans are traveling for bleisure. That's business and pleasure combined. Business and leisure combined, excuse me.
I was going to say, that's pleasure.
Hey, there.
As remote work becomes more common, travelers will attend meetings during the day, then see sights in the evening, or just work remotely from their hotel rooms.
When we went to Florida the last time, was when Nick was running Tracy McCreary's campaign, and he would spend 8 hours... while we were all gallivanting on the beach, he would spend 8 hours out on the deck raising money for Tracy, and then he would have his vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't decide whether it was sad you should have just stayed home, or if it was, well, otherwise I wouldn't be here having dinner on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I've done a couple of those, like with spring training tie-ins, where you're working all week, wife and daughter come down, they do some touristy things for a couple of days, and then on the weekends we're free to go. It makes sense to take advantage if you can.
One more story here before we go to break, Dave. I just wanted to bring this up because we talked about it last week. Trump's youngest son, Barron, has declined to be a delegate at the RNC.
Yeah, I think mom stepped in on that one.
I think she did because the message was coming from Melania's office.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. He cannot participate due to prior commitments.
Yeah, I imagine his
mom said no. And by the way, good for her.
Pretty busy.
Yeah. Good for her. Mom can say no in that scenario. Yeah. I know my mom would have too.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
You got it.
In the know, on the go. Trust KMOX for local news that impacts St. Louis and the region. The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Sweet 16 coming up at the top of the hour. So, Wheels, you have a new profile pic?
I do. Did you see it?
I did.
You guys can
good.
Go check it out on Twitter if you want. That is at KevinWheeler94. So last week when we were talking about wolves and I shocked the DGS world by people realizing that I'm into wolves,
I don't know if we were told for the first time. You've never given any indication.
Yeah, but you guys acted like it was like surprising. Like, I'm a dog guy.
It was the most and least surprising thing I've ever heard.
Right. Yeah. I figured you guys would be like, oh, yeah, of course you're a wolf guy.
It made sense once he said it. But it was like, you've never brought this up before, ever.
Well,
Wolves, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. So a listener, I want to try to find the tweet because I want to give them credit, but a listener went to use an AI program to create a profile. It was Dave Hines, who is a listener. He went through it using an AI app and created a photo that he titled Wheeler, Master of Wolves. And it's a nice, cool, like, brown wolf next to me. And it's me, like, if I was hot and a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's, I got, like, the long trench coat, and it's all blue, and I'm jacked. And, my, you know, I mean, like, my hair is long and wavy. It's awesome. So it's up there now. I'm going to go for that. So you guys think I should go for that?
Hell yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Grow the hair, hit the gym.
Do what you can.
Like, it really does look like my face.
It does.
If it was
slimmer and I was better looking, yes.
I mean, there are challenges to everything.
I got
to
work.
And if you had an enormous dire wolf next to you.
The wolf part I think we can handle, right? I mean, like, that's the easy part. I want to pose for that picture in real life, like in 1 year.
I look forward to the hair growing process.
I'm going to talk to the woman that does my hair and say, how do we make this happen?
Yeah. Let's
like,
do
what
it.
Do I need to do?
He's going to come in with extensions next week.
Let me talk to her. You're the master of wolves.
Yeah,
you don't need to bother
true.
Yourself with
that's
people
true.
Like her.
Christina, I'm going to be asking some questions when I come back.